From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
It's very clear. Our love is here to stay.
We're spending Christmas with one of the stars of the 1954 film White Christmas, the great singer Rosemary Clooney. We'll listen back to an interview recorded after the release of her memoir Girl Singer and her companion CD. We'll play and talk about recordings that span her career, including her first recorded solo performance when she was 17 in 1946. We're listening to her favorite Gershwin song, which was written in her living room back in the days when the house she now lives in was rented by the Gershwins. Rosemary Clooney, coming up on Fresh Air.
But oh my dear, our love is here to stay.
First the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. President Clinton is still trying to restore the Middle East peace process. Talks have been stalled for the past several months. NPR's Chad Pergram reports.
The president spoke for 15 minutes by phone overnight with Egyptian leader Hosni Mubarak. Mr. Clinton briefed Mubarak on discussions he held in Washington over the weekend with Israeli and Palestinian negotiators. The president is urging Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat and Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak to come back to Washington for discussions. Leaders will tell the president by Wednesday what their plans are. President Clinton has made the peace process one of his top goals during his final weeks in office. The process was dealt a setback last summer when the sides failed to reach an agreement during negotiations at Camp David. A spate of violence has plagued the Middle East since late September. The sides remain divided over the future of Jerusalem, borders of a Palestinian state, and the status of Palestinian refugees. Chad Pergram, NPR News, Washington.
As peace efforts went on, Christmas was relatively quiet in the West Bank and Gaza. Pilgrims and tourists stayed away from Bethlehem, the traditional site of Jesus' birth. The church where the Latin patriarch conducted the traditional Christmas Mass wasn't full for the first time in years. The town also didn't have its usual Christmas decorations. Bethlehem was the site of some of the fiercest fighting between Palestinians and Israeli troops. 3 months of violence have left nearly 350 people dead, most of them Palestinian. Other parts of the Palestinian-controlled territories were also quiet today, with no reports of serious clashes or new fatalities by nightfall. Demand for electricity in California is down today, with schools and businesses closed for the Christmas holiday. But relief from the state's energy shortage is likely to be short-lived. Scott Horsley reports from member station KPBS.
California's Public Utilities Commission holds hearings later this week on a plan to raise consumers' electric rates. U.S. Energy Secretary Bill Richardson says higher rates are probably needed to fix the state's energy woes. Demand for electricity is about 22% lower than at this time last week, but Kellen Flukiger, who's with the state agency that runs the power grid, says even with new power plants now on the drawing board, California will likely face more shortages through the summer of 2002.
If somehow things are expedited, more facilities show up more quickly, as has happened in some places in the Midwest when prices were high, relief could come somewhat earlier. It's not impossible. But, of course, then we have to deal with all of the issues around siting and construction of facilities in the state.
Forecasters say demand for power on Tuesday will be back up near last week's levels. For NPR News, I'm Scott Horsley in San Diego.
Strong winds blasted Southern California today. Gusts up to 65 miles per hour knocked out power to thousands of people in northern Orange County. Winds also whipped up a wildfire in a mountainous part of Ventura County. This is NPR. With less than a month to go before Inauguration Day, congressional and military staff members are scrambling to complete planning for the event in consultation with the incoming Bush administration. NPR's Craig Windham reports.
Construction is underway on the inaugural platform at the Capitol building. 2,000 dignitaries will have seating there, including the new president and vice president, the Congress, the Supreme Court, and members of the diplomatic corps. There will be 200,000 tickets to the Capitol grounds, most for standing room. More than half of those tickets are being given to members of Congress to distribute. Requests are already pouring into congressional offices. Much of the planning is being done by the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, headed by Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. But McConnell has already written to the president-elect, telling him the Bush team will have the final say in choosing everything from choral groups to a poet and members of the clergy to deliver the invitation. purification and benediction. Also to be determined are countless other matters, such as the number and location of inaugural balls. Craig Windham, NPR News, Washington.
Indonesian police officials say they fear more bombings at Christian churches. Yesterday, bombs went off outside churches in six Indonesian cities, including Jakarta, the capital. The attacks left at least 14 people dead. The bombings were apparently timed to go off just as prayer services were about to begin. Indonesia's president, Abdurrahman Wahid, blamed the attacks on forces that want to destabilize his government. In the past, Wahid has blamed supporters of Indonesia's former dictator, Suharto, for acts of violence. Religious tensions have recently been high in Indonesia. I'm Corey Flintoff, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Florence and John Schumann Foundation for support of independent, non-commercial public affairs reporting.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we listen back to our interview with Rosemary Clooney, recorded last year after the release of her memoir Girl Singer and its companion CD. Many people know her best from her pop hits of the 50s, like Come On to My House and Hey There, and from her 1954 film White Christmas. Since the 80s, she's been making a great series of jazz recordings on the Concord label, featuring many of her favorites from the American Popular Songbook. Let's get started with the first solo recording she made, a radio transcription from 1946, when she was 17. It's featured on the CD Songs from the Girl Singer.
Sooner or later you're gonna be coming around, I'll betcha. I'll bet you that I'll get you. You wait and see. Sooner or later you'll wanna be hanging around. I'll let you. I'll bet you if I let you, baby, me. You're gonna knock on my door. You did it before. Matter of factly, I don't know exactly when, but sooner or later you're gonna come hanging around and want my loving again.
That was Rosemary Clooney with bandleader Tony Pastor. She started her career singing duets on the radio with her sister Betty in 1945 at radio station WLW in Cincinnati. Rosemary was 16, Betty was 13. Before we hear the recording of their audition, let's hear what was going through Rosemary Clooney's mind then.
I had my sister with me, and that's made all the difference in the world. We really supported each other, so I wasn't afraid. She was very brave. She had the courage in the family. I'm absolutely sure of that. So I wasn't afraid, but it was all so new and so unexpected. So there was a little edge, and it sounds kind of childlike because we were kids.
Okay, well, this is Rosemary Clooney and her sister Betty, recorded in 1945.
Buzzer took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzer tried to throw the monkey off his back, but the monkey grabbed the hold and said, "Now listen, Jack, do-do-do, straighten up and fly right. Do-do-do, straighten up and fly right. Do-do-do, straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top, boom, boom. What's the use in diving, boom?"
Well, did you hope to become kind of like the Boswell sisters or the Andrews sisters?
I think that we had no hope except to get a job. I think that's really what our ambition was at that moment, and didn't think much further than just a paycheck from WLW would have been just fine. And that, and indeed we did.
So you sang on the radio station WLW, and then you and your sister started singing with the Tony Pastor band, a big band. When did it become clear that you were going to be the soloist and that your sister was going to leave show business?
That was 3 years later when Betty left, but the reason that I started singing the solos is because when we joined Tony's band, an awful lot of the music was in a key that was too high for Betty, and so I was singing the songs that the girl singer that had left had been, you know, they had been arranged for her, so that was my job. So I sang a little bit higher than Betty, so that's why I had the solos. That's the way it started, and the way it continued was just the fact that I think that I wanted it very much. Betty was 3 years younger, as I said, and so she was very young when she started. And at one point, 3 years into our job, she said, "I'd really like to be on the other side of the bandstand for a while. I'd like to see what it's like to go to a dance instead of being up here on the bandstand watching other people have all the fun."
I guess it was Rosemary Clooney. She has a new autobiography called Girl Singer and a new companion CD of the same name. I want to play something else from the companion CD, and this is a duet that you made with Frank Sinatra, but there's lots of Sinatra stories, I think, to tell before we before we get to this CD. First of all, you say that you learned a lot about enunciation in singing from listening to Sinatra. What do you think you learned about diction from listening to him?
He finished words. He finished words. He could hold a note for as long as he wanted to, but it wasn't kind of left out there in the air. He would finish the word. There would be a consonant. You could hear it, and it seemed to me that that demanded attention. The way that he did that.
You made a duet with Sinatra in 1950 called Peachtree Street.
Yes,
which I'm sure most of our listeners have not heard.
I'm sure.
How did you get to be the singer on this?
Well, Dinah Shore was scheduled to do it, and she listened to the song and hated it. And it was Frank's publishing company that published the song, and therefore he wanted to do it. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, his name is on the record as one of the writers, which I find difficult to believe, but I'm not sure. In any event, Dinah said no. And so Frank was talking to Manny Sachs, who was then A&R, the head of the A&R at Columbia, and he said, "All right, who is the last person that you signed? Who's the last female that you signed on the label? I'll record it with her, and it'll be a big hit." So I was it. I'm not sure I was it, but Manny was a friend of mine and of my manager, so that's how I got the job.
Did you like the song?
No, but I liked Frank Sinatra.
Well, why don't we hear this song, and then we'll talk about the song and Sinatra some more. This is Peachtree Street, Rosemary Clooney and Frank Sinatra, recorded in, do you remember what year this is?
No.
Oh, I see. It's 1950 it was originally released.
Okay.
Say, Frank, you want to take a walk?
Well, sure, sweetie. Just pick a street.
Piccadilly Circus.
Oh, I'd rather not.
Champs-Élysées?
Mais non.
Times Square?
Nah, 'cause there's nothing can compare with strolling along Peachtree Street with my baby on my arm. I've got the sweetest peach in Georgia, and she just came off the farm.
Strolling along Peachtree Street, I'm happy as can be. I've got to thank the state of Georgia for my baby's family tree.
Everybody in Atlanta knows what a treasure I found. I'm gonna set my gem upon the main stem.
We spread a lot of little peaches all around.
I feel like a new millionaire.
Rosemary Clooney with Frank Sinatra, recorded in 1950. Well, you both sound really good, but I have to agree with your judgment and Dinah Shore's judgment. Not a very good song. And it didn't sell very well either, did it?
No. Dinah was right.
So meanwhile, Frank Sinatra started dating your sister, Betty. When did he start seeing her?
Well, it was in between. I believe it was before he married Ava. And there was a wonderful restaurant in New York, and the reason that I absolutely bring it up and mention the name is because the sweet man who owned it, Patsy, ran a tab for me one whole summer when I couldn't afford to pay for the bill. And so I have never forgotten it. It's still right there on 56th Street, and the family still owns it, so it's lovely. Anyway, we were in that restaurant, and my sister had borrowed a dress of mine that was pretty good-looking, actually. It was kind of a georgette coat and a white collar and cuffs, so that it looked kind of like a choir girl, except you could see through it. So it was, you know, it told a couple of stories. In any event, my sister was just, you know, talking to me and very animated, and there was a booth in the back that had frosted glass, you only passed it if you were going like to the ladies' room or something. So I didn't know who was there, but it was Frank Sinatra who came over and said, "Well, how are you, Rosemary?" I said, "Fine. This is my sister, Betty. This is, my manager," and so on. And he called the next day and asked her out. So I said to Betty, "Look, I can't I go with you?" And she said, "Well, I don't know whether you can or not." I said, "Well, can I go with you for like a part of the evening?" And so she, I guess she asked him, and he took me too. But I remember being dropped off rather early on in the evening.
He said that there was one time that he sang to her. He was on stage, and he looked into her eyes as he sang the song.
We went to the Astor Roof because the Tommy Dorsey Band was there. And so he had not been with the Tommy Dorsey Band for a very long time. Well, not very long, but long enough so that it was quite a thing for Sinatra to show up, you know, at this at the roof to hear the band. And so he said to my sister, he said, "Would you like to hear me sing with the band?" And so he sang "I'll Never Smile Again." And I'll never get over that as long as I live. The two of us, you know, sitting there at a table listening to Frank Sinatra sing, and the people in the place being so surprised and so excited by the fact that he was singing. It was wonderful.
What really surprised me in this Sinatra chapter is that he once said something insulting about you while he was on stage in Vegas. What did he say?
Well, the way that I heard about it was that there was a wonderful editor of the Las Vegas Sun, whose name escapes me right now. This is one of those 70s moments. Terry, excuse me, but maybe I'll think of it a little bit later.
It's okay.
He wrote an editorial on the front page of the paper and said, "Please excuse Frank Sinatra's bad manners, Miss Clooney." And then proceeded to write about the fact that he was saying the reason music was not doing very well, and the golden era of music was over, and just kind of being very, very down about music altogether, is because of songs like "Come On to My House." So, I was kind of the object of his long speech about the way that the music was deteriorating. So, I found it interesting because Ava Gardner was a friend of mine. So Ava was with him, and so she would come to my second show every single night because she wanted to hear one song, a Gershwin song. I can't think of it now. But there was a Gershwin song that I sang that she liked, so she would come, listen to that, and talk to me for a while afterwards. I think instead of saying it out loud, she wanted to kind of make up for the fact that he had said some things about me that that she didn't particularly like either.
Well, I think the dig at "Come On to My House" might have been more about Mitch Miller than about you, since Mitch was
Sinatra's
former producer, and
Yeah,
Sinatra's
I think you're right. I think you're right, Terry, that it was at Mitch.
However, he did say about you that you sing the most awful music, the worst thing that's ever happened to music in this country, the worst fake accent that he's ever heard. What fake accent was he talking about?
Well, you see, it was an Armenian folk song. I didn't know what an Armenian accent sounded like, so I just did the accent that I learned from the Tony Pastor band. Whenever we'd visit anybody's house, they were usually Italian, and so that was the fake accent.
Oh, okay.
So I guess he had a right to say that if he felt it.
Now, Frank Sinatra, in spite of what he said about you, didn't he later sign you to his record company, Reprise?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
So he probably did not feel very badly about your voice after all.
No, I don't believe that was the case. Yeah, when Bing did his first television show, Frank and I were the guests, and the three of us did one of those long, long medleys that lasted almost 15 minutes, you know, of bits of songs, and it was quite something. So no, I saw him socially. We did things together, and so no, I'm sure that isn't true.
We're listening back to a 1999 interview with Rosemary Clooney. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1999 interview with Rosemary Clooney, recorded after the publication of her memoir, Girl Singer, and the release of its companion CD. In your new autobiography, Girl Singer, you write a bit about your movie career. And when you started making movies, you said that your designer was Paramount's top designer, Edith Head, and that she gave you your look. What was the look?
Well, kind of full skirts and kind of girl next door, except that if the girl was really rich, because you know, there'd be some, especially for evening clothes, she would have a white georgette skirt that was embroidered in kind of shiny black thread, so that it would glisten. I love the way that she designed clothes. And they were always comfortable, and well, not always. I shouldn't say that, because she'd say, "How does it feel?" And I'd say, "It feels really good." She said, "Fine, take it in a couple of inches. You shouldn't feel good." That was Edith. I loved Edith.
How'd you feel about being the girl next door?
Well, I thought that was fine. I thought that was fine. It wasn't a bad thing to be. I moved upstairs, I think, when I married Joe. You know, Jose Ferrer, but I think for a while I liked that. I liked that just fine.
Did you want to be the glamorous one?
No, I never did. I never did. I never thought that either. I had so many men friends, and friends, just friends. I think maybe that goes with traveling with a band. Right now, you know, it's an interesting thing, because there's a piece being done on Bing Crosby, and they asked Mary Frances, Bing's daughter, about his friends, and she said he had many, many men friends and one woman friend, and that was Rosemary Clooney. So it's interesting. I did have an awful lot of good friends that lasted a long time.
Now, pertaining to the girl next door look, you say that you tried out for the role of Sarah, the Salvation Army girl, in the original production of Frank Lesser's musical Guys and Dolls.
Yes.
And what did he say to you?
He said that, how did he put it? How can I say it? He said I didn't sound like a virgin. I guess that's close enough. I think I did when I talked, but not when I sang.
Right. And I think that's an interesting distinction, that they might have cast you as the girl next door, but you had a very sophisticated style of singing.
Yeah, the singing was different, wasn't it? Yeah, I think people perceived it in a different way.
Let's hear another recording, another one featured on the CD Girl Singer, a double CD companion to your new autobiography of the same name. And this is a 1951 recording of Tenderly, which was your theme song, I think, for your TV show?
Right.
How did it become your theme song?
I think probably I was proudest of that record, because it was not an easy song to sing. And it was a song that in the middle of all the mambo italianos and come onto my house and all the kind of songs that I was singing that summer. One time I had a chance to work with Percy Faith, and Mitch let me sing tenderly because I asked him. And so that was something that that made me happy, because at least I could show one side of my talent that hadn't been seen before, heard before.
This is Rosemary Clooney, recorded in 1951.
The evening breeze caressed the trees tenderly. The trembling trees embraced the breeze tenderly. Then you and I came wandering by, and lost in a sigh were we. The shore was kissed by sea and mist tenderly. I can't forget how two hearts met breathlessly. Your arms opened wide and closed me inside. You took my lips, you took my love so tenderly.
Rosemary Clooney. We'll hear more music and more of our 1999 interview in the second half of the show. Her memoir is called Girl Singer. Her companion CD is called Songs from the Girl Singer. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
I can't forget how two hearts met breathlessly. Your arms opened wide and closed me inside. You took my lips, you took my so tenderly.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
A foggy day in London town.
Coming up, Rosemary Clooney talks about working with arranger Nelson Riddle. We're listening to a track from her CD, I Remember Nelson.
I viewed the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost its charm. How long, I wondered, could this thing last? But the age of miracles hadn't passed. For suddenly I saw you there, and through foggy London town, the
sun was shining everywhere.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our 1999 interview with Rosemary Clooney. It was recorded after the publication of her autobiography, Girl Singer, and the release of her companion CD, Songs from the Girl Singer. We'll hear more of that CD a little later. Let's reminisce a little about what television was like when you had your TV show in the 50s. You not only did your TV show, you were a guest on a lot of shows at the time. What were some of the TV highlights in your memory?
I think probably Bing's show was one, you know, the first television show that Bing did. And I did so many Hope shows. I did Bob Hope shows that were such fun because the you know, you could break up and Bob would be understanding and funny about it and laugh. And it was just a lot of fun. I loved doing my own show because I was home. But then I was usually pregnant, so I was always, not always, but halfway through the series of shows, I would do 39 shows, and halfway through the series, I'd start having to hide behind higher pieces of furniture on the set. I could look at the set and know exactly where my spot was because the highest piece of furniture I was right behind it.
I want to get back to Mitch Miller, who produced Tenderly and also produced your novelty hits like Come On to My House and Mama
right.
Italiano, which, by the way, you hear these things at Italian restaurants all the time now.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Anyways.
Come On to My... I hear it on you know, for ads on television, which I find interesting. They have to get the license from Sony now, I believe.
Uh-huh.
But it's funny. I hear it all the time, and my little grandson knows it. And yeah, he likes for me to sing it.
Huh.
And also corrects me if I make a mistake, which is very liable for me. I'm liable to do that.
Oh, he corrects you.
Yes, okay. Yes. I said, come on to my house. I'm going to give you Easter egg. And he said, Christmas tree. I said, oh, sorry.
Now, you say that working with Mitch Miller, he wanted his records to sound louder than anybody else's. Why did he want it, and how did he achieve that?
I don't know how he achieved it. I know that he had, for a certain amount of time, his finger on the pulse of the buying public of the United States because, boy... just as it was amazing, the number of hits that came out of Columbia, Guy Mitchell and me and Johnny Ray and an awful lot of people. There wasn't anything that he could do that didn't. He also had a very good working relationship with the sales department. So if he said, ship 300,000 on consignment, then they went out and sold it. He had a very, very good way with all the departments, so which was unusual with an A&R man, for an A&R man.
I want to play a record from this period with Mitch Miller that I think is really holds up as a terrific recording. This is from 1954, and the song is Hey There. You're probably really tired of it, but I...
No, I'm not. No, I'm
I
not.
Think this really
I'm not
holds
tired
up.
Of it. I think, yeah, I was pregnant with Miguel then, my oldest child, and he was born shortly after this record.
Is it hard to sing when you're pregnant, if you're very pregnant?
No, you know, I asked Joe Stafford that because she had one child when I was pregnant with Miguel, and she said, no, it's easier, actually. And it seems to me that it was easier for me, too. I don't know why, but it was okay.
This is Hey There, Rosemary Clooney.
Lately when I'm in my room all by myself in the solitary gloom, I call to myself. Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes. Love never made a fool of you. You used to be too wise. Hey there, you on that high-flying cloud. Though
better forget him. Him with his nose in the air. He has you dancing on a string. Break it and he won't care. Won't you take this advice I hand you like a mother? Or are you not seeing things too clear? Are you too much in love to hear? Is it all going in one ear and out the other? Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes.
Are you talking to me?
Love never made a fool of you.
Not until now.
You used to be.
Yes, I was once.
Will you take this advice I hand you like a mother? Or am I not seeing things too clear? Are you just too far gone to hear? Is it all going in one ear? And out the other.
Rosemary Clooney, I have to tell you the part where you say, are you talking to me? I always think of Travis Bickle and Taxi Driver when I hear that.
Oh, that's funny. It's true, isn't it? I haven't heard that all the way through for so long.
Did it seem corny or adventurous to you when you recorded that part?
Well, you see, I hadn't seen the show, so I didn't know that that was what John Raitt did, you know, in the Broadway show as well, you know, Pajama Game. I didn't think it was corny. I thought it was okay. I still think it's okay too. I really like it.
We're listening back to a 1999 interview with Rosemary Clooney. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Rosemary Clooney. A CD of yours that you recorded with Duke Ellington was recently reissued called Blue Rose. And you've already told the story on our show about how you were pregnant when you were recording Blue Rose and you couldn't really leave home. So Billy Strayhorn came to your house in, I guess it was Los Angeles, to work with you on your tracks. And then it was remixed with the Duke Ellington tracks that were recorded in New York. But you tell some great stories about Strayhorn, and I want to play an excerpt of the piece that Strayhorn wrote for you for the session, the title song, Blue Rose. And I'd love for you to describe the advice that he gave you before singing this.
Oh, all right. All right, I will, because it's a wonderful piece of direction. Billy went to... first came to me, and we picked the songs and picked the keys, then came back to New York and did all of the backgrounds with Duke, wrote them and pre-recorded them, and came back with all of the tapes. And he was in the booth for the whole album. Now came the time when the title song Blue Rose was going to come on, and he said, "This isn't a vocal performance. This is, you've got the radio on your dressing table, and you're making up to go out on a really special date. So you're looking in the mirror at yourself, but you're listening to the radio, and it's Duke's band. And what you're doing is that you're just combing your hair and getting ready to look really good and just listening to the music and singing along with it." That was his direction.
Now, why was that such good advice?
because it was not a performance. It kind of in the background, but it also had a point of view. I was looking forward to what was going to happen in a little while, you know, have a wonderful time with somebody that I really liked. And I was listening to Duke Ellington to get in the mood. What could be better?
And as an actress, this kind of direction was probably especially
perfect,
useful for
just
you.
Perfect, just perfect.
Well, let's hear an excerpt of this recording of Blue Rose.
Bobby, Viva, Bobby, Viva, Viva, Baba, Viva, Baba, Bobby, Bobby.
Rosemary Clooney with the Duke Ellington Orchestra, recorded in 1956. Boy, it must have been great to have Billy Strayhorn write something for you and then direct you.
Oh, he was singing it. He was so wonderful too, because he was like one of my kids, or one, you know, or really a close friend, like when I was a kid, because he would, I gave him the key to the house, you know, so he could come in, because I was sometimes not feeling so hot early in the morning when he wanted to work a little bit. So he would come up the stairs and knock on the bedroom door and come in and sit on the end of the bed. And he'd say, "Will you feel like anything to eat this morning?" And sometimes I would and sometimes I wouldn't. But he really became so close to me and so much a part of my family that it was an important time in my life.
In a recent biography of Billy Strayhorn, you know, it was revealed that he was gay, which probably a lot of people in the music world knew, but people outside of it, I think for the most part, didn't. I'm wondering if you were aware of that when you were working with him, and if he was
reasonably
open about it.
I was. We didn't discuss it really. I just knew. It didn't change anything.
So did he either? Did he, like, both not hide it and not make an issue of it at the same time?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly, which is the way it should be with friends, I think.
Mm-hmm. In 1961, you recorded an album with Nelson Riddle that wasn't released until a couple of years later. And I want to play a track from that. But first, you and Nelson Riddle were actually in love with each other when you recorded this album, but you were both married at the time.
Yes.
So you couldn't really be together in the way that you wanted to.
No.
What did you hear in him musically that brought out things in your singing?
He was the first arranger. I can't say the only one, but the first arranger that really read the words to a song and asked me what I thought they meant and what did it mean to me. It didn't take very long. It was just a short little conversation about something, but he really understood my feelings about what I was trying to say or sing. And so he would advance that if it was a something, Terry, that would be difficult for me to sing, if it was something full out that would be at the top of my range, he would have seven brass under it so that I would have such support. If there was something that some point had to be made so that he'd had to be slowed down so that I would be able to really make this point dramatically. He knew that moment. I never worked with anyone ever that could feel what you wanted to say to other people.
I'm sure many, many people have had the fantasy of singing a beautiful love song accompanied by the man who they loved and who loved them back. And that's something you actually had the privilege of doing, and yet it couldn't be a public love. No one could know.
No.
So there must have been a lot of kind of feeling that was like pent up in these songs that couldn't be expressed in a more overt way in the public.
Actually, the it could be let out in the songs. It was not pent up in the songs. It
right.
was pent up in our everyday lives, perhaps, but not in the music, not ever in the music.
Why don't we hear How Will I Remember You from your CD with Nelson Riddle? What are your thoughts about this song?
The song was a song that I'd never heard before. The melody was by Walter Gross. I believe the words are by Jay Lawrence. I'm not sure. I really think it's one of the most beautiful songs that I've ever sung, and certainly at this time was absolutely perfect. It was the way that I was feeling and the way that he was feeling, and so the writing and the music were toward the same end. It was absolutely truthful.
I'll say I just looked up the lyric. It's Carl Sigman.
Carl Sigman.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So this is How Will I Remember You, Rosemary Clooney, with the Nelson Riddle Orchestra. Remember You, recorded in 1961. We'll get back to our 1999 interview with Rosemary Clooney after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Rosemary Clooney. She has a new autobiography called Girl Singer and a new companion CD. Well, I'd be happy spending the day listening to your records, but I'm going to move up to the present and talk about a happy occasion that recently happened in your life. You married Dante DiPaolo, who has been a close friend of yours since your early movie days.
Absolutely. The first movie that I made, he was working at Paramount then, but I didn't meet him until Well, I suppose I met him then, but I didn't get to know him very well until the Bob Hope picture, Here Come the Girls, and he was working on that picture. So it was wonderful because we started going out together, and I could really act my own age, which was not too old. And so we did things like water fights and, you know, ridiculous things, driving down Melrose in two cars. You know, it was a teenage picture, for heaven's sake, kind of a bad one. But he was wonderful, and he was kind, and he helped me an awful lot with the dancing that I had to do, which I have no talent for at all. And he was also very understanding about my family, loved my family, was a good friend of my brother's. And I went off and married somebody else, and that didn't set well. Of course, it didn't set too well with him, and I felt bad, but I didn't warn him, and it was not my proudest moment.
So how did you reunite?
Well, we were in two cars. I had a Corvette after having five children and living in a station wagon for so many years. I went out and bought a blue Corvette, and I just loved it. And he had, on the other hand, a 1956 T-Bird, which he still has. And he pulled up beside me in Beverly Hills at a stoplight and said, "Rosella." Now, no one had called me that before or since. And I turned around and looked at this man that I hadn't seen for 20 years and asked him to call me. And he said, "I don't have your phone number." And so he said he was happy that the dashboard was dusty because he wrote it in the dust, Crestview, whatever, 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 and called me, and he never left. Man who came to dinner.
So after being together for several years, why at the age of 70 did you decide to actually make it legit?
Actually, I think it's the grandchildren because they don't understand roommates. I got by with roommates until they got to be starting in their teenage years, and then they were kind of looking at me askance. So we went back to my hometown, Maysville, Kentucky, back to the church where I was baptized and confirmed and all the rest of it. And people came from miles around, and Bob and Dolores Hope flew in. And, you know, my friend Linda Wagner from here. I can't tell you what it meant to me to have such a lovely time.
Rosemary Clooney, I have to say that, and I always say this to people, that you, to me, always embody the best about show business values, putting on a good show, seeming to really communicate to your audience and care about them, just giving, like truly giving a lot. The whole show business creed, which a lot of people pay lip service to but really don't really follow through on. And also, you don't, I don't know, there's a lot of people who have become really famous over the years and who either become caricatures of the talent that they had or just become really spoiled and obnoxious. And it seems very hard in America to be famous and gifted and not be somehow wounded by that. Now, I know you were wounded, I mean, in the sense that you had a drug habit that you had to get over and everything, but your singing and your art seems to have remained really pretty pure, and I'm not sure that there is a question here. but I guess the question is about how you managed to kind of keep true to yourself living in that celebrity world, which strikes me as a very dangerous world.
I think, first of all, thank you. Thank you, thank you for saying that, because it's what I want. It's what I want to do. I really think more than I was a singer when I was a young baby, a child, a three-year-old child. I was a singer at 70. I've been a mother and a wife and all these other things, but first and foremost, and today, I am a singer, and that's really what I love to do, and that's what I'll be, always.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for sharing some of your life with us and for talking to us about your records. I love your singing, as I think you know, and I want to thank you again.
You're my good friend, Terry, and I depend on you, so hang in there.
Rosemary Clooney, recorded in 1999. Her autobiography is called Girl Singer. The companion CD is called Songs from the Girl Singer. Her latest CD is called Brazil. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Roberta Shurrock, and Monique Nazareth, with Megan Howell and Patty Leswing. Our researcher is Jessica Chu. Anne-Marie Baldonado directed the show. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with a song Rosemary Clooney sang in the 1954 film White Christmas. Merry Christmas from all of us at Fresh Air.
The sun is shining, the grass is green, the orange and palm trees sway. I've never seen such a day. In Beverly Hills, L.A. But it's December the 24th, and I am longing to be up north. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. Of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. And by the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
It's Jazz Week on Fresh Air. On our next edition, great musicians who played with Charlie Parker, pianist and bandleader Jay McShann, drummer Max Roach, and trumpeter Red Rodney. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.